It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Hello and welcome to Continued Success, your weekly check-in on the mental state of Phillies fans. It is not always a pleasant place to be. I don't know why it was my instinct to go with it's unpleasant, even though it's extremely pleasant right now. I got to tell you, with the spring weather that was introduced today and the it's closer to actual baseball that's being played right now, unbelievable. I'm Justin Clue, the head guy at The Good Fight, and with me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. What's up, Liz?
What's up, Justin? There's nothing happening here aside from there was a pretty intense tornado warning earlier today.
Wow.
But the sirens go off, I think, a few towns over.
Huh. Didn't see that on the baseball rumors websites.
Weird.
Huh. Crazy. Well, in any case, we're glad you're safe and that your signal can reach us from 8 feet under the ground in your doomsday bunker. So,
I wish I had a doomsday bunker, man. I wish I had one.
I mean, I kind of do too. That's a topic for a different show, I think. But yeah, no, I agree with that sentiment. So baseball, Liz, the Phillies are progressing pretty much as planned, but baseball in general, it's thrown a couple of twists at us this offseason as we march through March here. So I don't know. Let's start with the agreement we read about between the Atlantic League and unaffiliated league of independent teams. Boy, you know, I packed so many syllables into that phrase just so I could have them all for lunch. Like, that was ridiculous. The Atlantic League and Major League Baseball partnered up to experiment with some new rules, some new implementations in the 2019 Atlantic League season, which I believe starts in June. It's one of the shorter seasons. But Liz, I mean, I guess we should just read through these rules. But before we do you have a favorite?
No.
Yeah, that's the general reaction to this.
Let's hear them. Let's get down to it.
All right. Well, there's I'm looking at 7 bullet points that were listed in the press release announcing this agreement, and they read as follows. Home plate umpire assisted in calling balls and strikes by a TrackMan radar tracking system. No mound visits permitted by players or coaches other than for pitching changes or medical issues. Pitchers must face a minimum of 3 batters or reach the end of an inning before they exit the game unless the pitcher becomes injured. Increase size of first, second, and third base from 15 inches square to 18 inches square. Require 2 infielders to be on each side of a second base when a pitch is released. If not, the ball is dead and the umpire shall call a ball. Time between innings and pitching changes reduced from 2 hours and 5 minutes to 2 minutes and 5 seconds to 1 minute and 45 seconds. And distance from pitching rubber to home plate extended 24 inches in the second half of the season only, with no change to mound height or slope. And you still don't have a favorite after I read them all off like that word for word. I, for one, kind of like the require 2 infielders to be on each side of second base rule, because the second half of it says the ball is dead and the umpire shall call a ball. And like, they're clearly still trying to write these rules like they're old timey original baseball rules, so they could just slide real easily into the other ancient doctrines from like the 1800s. But I don't know. Is there one of these that you're like, oh, cool? Or are you just against all of them?
Well, I mean, I kind of like the make the base larger ones, because it seems, I don't know why. Why would they want to even do that? I don't understand what benefit that gain, what does that give anyone? That's why that was my favorite, because it's just like, why don't we do this?
Well,
it's
I
just threw a whole bunch of crap up onto a whiteboard one day, and that one somehow, you know, squeaked through the exercise that everyone has to do with like little stick-on dots to pick which one's their favorite.
What do you think of the idea that the bigger base, and this is what someone explained to me, I believe yesterday, what do you think of the bigger base being used as a method to break up crazy double plays to prevent collisions and injuries, or to just give a wider berth to all the ambiguous, lazily enforced rules surrounding that position. Because I had someone who told me that like the bigger bases could lead to less bang bang plays at second. I don't know.
There aren't a whole lot of players. I mean, plays that injure people now. I mean, there are some, but it's been that way forever. When players actually went in with spikes up all the time. Like, I don't understand what that would really change. Like, it's been like this for years. I don't think there's been like some kind of steady increase. So I don't know why they would do that, you know, to decrease injury. It doesn't make sense to me. And like the way the rules are working now are fine. There haven't really been a whole ton of disputes. The disputes have been when they look at, you know, a hairline safe and out calls and actually overturn a call based on something where the play, you know, should stand. There people's issue with that, I guess, is replay, not with the way the rules have been applied on the field. So I don't understand why that's happening. I guess it's not my favorite. I guess I'm angry at it. I guess it's my favorite because it's just me. I don't understand what the point of it is. Like some of the others, I could sort of see it. They want to decrease the efficiency of pitchers. You know, I mean, if the point is to make it easier for players to get on it and stay on it, is it to increase stolen bases or?
If anything, they should be making those plays at second base more aggressive, frankly. I mean, they should just give one of the guys a knife and just see what happens when you introduce a blade to that sort of chaotic high-speed situation.
I'm sorry I'm droning on about this, but I'm like thinking about it. I'm like, what even is why? Like, because some of these rules, like I can see the point of. I still don't necessarily like that they're imposing this on this independent league just for funsies.
I, in writing a story on that, actually, on the impact these rules might be having on anyone related to the Atlantic League, the most pushback that I've experienced so far has been about the changing of the distance from the mound to the plate halfway through the season. I've talked to some pitchers who are like, look, you know, this is we've been playing under these certain parameters for so long, and now we have to readjust to a different set of feet after starting the season and working out to continue to throw the same length. The halfway through they would have to change, and they've obviously they're taking that a little personally, because it also leans into the idea that when baseball does try to improve itself, it's doing so at the expense of good pitching, because they're trying to increase the amount of offense and make things theoretically easier for the offenses to score runs, whereas their jobs keep getting harder.
MLB had the answer with the runs problem. They had it when you know Rawlings did something weird to the ball for like 8 months. Rob Manfred still won't recognize. They had the answer to the offense problem. We saw it from like the All-Star break in 16 to the end of the 17 season. So you know, just have them do that again. Because that was perfect. You know, Giancarlo Stanton hit 8 gazillion home runs. You know, Aaron Judge was just like hitting home runs at will. Half the time he didn't, just because he wanted to change things up a little bit. Like, go back to that. Don't change the distance from the mound to the plate. That is, I mean, and if they're going to do this, just hire 52 random dudes to make up a team. Not random dudes, but like former college baseball players. You know, guys have actually played, and have them just simulate all this stuff instead of making the Atlantic League of people trying to make a living do this. Like, I really am curious, and no one's been able to answer the question, what the Atlantic League is getting for this.
Well,
because Major League Baseball has no purview over them. They can't make them do this. They have no, you know, they don't have the ability to force them to do it. So there has to be some kind of money. And I would love to find out what it is, because I'm pretty sure it's not getting to the players who have to do this.
One of the things that we do know the league is receiving is what the press release refers to as enhanced scouting. And that, of course, is something that everyone involved with the Atlantic League is actually very excited about. Even the players who were a little confused about the rules and the potential effectiveness of the rules. Even they said, like, well, look, that's obviously good news. That's, you know, of those I've spoken to thus far. But that's something that the league is obviously citing as one of their primary like gets from this deal. But it also says like there's a level of competition in this league, which there is, that is high enough that Major League Baseball can realistically test on a league that is in the middle of the regular season playing actual baseball at a competitive level, as opposed to like the Arizona Fall League or spring training when the games are being played by prospects who've never played on the major league level, or exhibition games that are, you know, that was the general thinking there. But yeah, at the end of the day, we might not know what the full details of the deal included, but that was certainly one of them. And for any minor league player, further scouting or more technologically advanced scouting is probably seen as a good thing.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I guess it just seems like not a lot. It seems like they should be getting more for, you know, and I'm sure the teams are getting something. The league itself is getting something. But it also seems like all the players are getting is enhanced scouting, which is not actually compensation. That doesn't count as compensation. It's a perk, but that's not, you know, compensation for doing this. I mean, granted, they're in this league and they have to do what they're told, but it seems like they should get something else out of this besides enhanced scouting if they're going to be the ones testing out all this crazy crap.
Well,
it's not crap. Some of it's interesting, but it just feels, I mean, again, if some of it feels really random, you know, they haven't really revealed why they're doing it. Like, what are they looking for? They're just kind of imposing these changes. Like, or what are we supposed to?
I wonder which ones.
Like they have to do this out in the open. They can't do this behind closed doors, but they're still going to tell us as little as possible. I'm amazed they even told us what they're doing.
I wonder which ones are there specifically just to be distractions from other ones so that we're all talking about one of them
like the
while another one has like a shady, there's some sort of shady motivation for introducing it. So they're like, I don't know. Let's say we're making the bases bigger. That's all anybody will talk about.
Exactly.
Well, one thing we are getting, Liz, is more new rules beyond those that are still only hypothetical in the laboratory of the Atlantic League in 2019. And this is what
this offseason is never ending.
I know it rules.
Because now it's all just rules now. It was off. It was just the pain of you know, free agency. And now it's just going to be like three solid weeks of everyone bitching about the rules, including myself.
It's going to be great, gang. Finally, something to complain about in this part of the baseball calendar. Well, Liz, the changes effective in 2019 will employ some of these are more interesting changes, I think, than the Atlantic League experimentation going on. We got inning breaks that are going to be different in 2019. They'll be going down from 2 minutes and 5 seconds to 2 minutes. And for national, that's for local games. For national games, it'll go from 2:25 to 2 minutes.
Still, by the way, subject to discussions with broadcast partners. So that's not even.
Oh, so that's not going to happen.
Okay. It's not even solidified yet.
Folks, forget I said anything. That's not real, probably.
It's on there. They had the stones to put it on there. So I kind of like
great,
that.
But as soon as one partner calls them and says, I don't like it, you know, that rule's going away in a second. If they're nothing but interested in pleasing their partners at MLB, certainly. There's a trade deadline change now that anytime after July 31st, it will become an actual trade deadline and there won't be trades made in August. I've always thought that was strange. We call it the trade deadline, but they continue to make moves well after the trade deadline during the same season. But that appears to be a thing of the past. Do you think that intensifies the trade deadline? It must.
Of course. It must. It absolutely does. It's good. I'm glad. There's one trade deadline. It'll be one extravaganza of stuff happening all between, you know, the entire hour before the deadline. It'll just be, you know, raining deals and it'll be over. We won't have to worry about it in August. It's just baseball now. And I like that. No more trades.
I know that there have been trade deadlines where I've gone absolutely crazy because of how nuts everything was, but I can't remember any of them offhand ever. I'm not saying that's a reason not to have this hard trade deadline. I'm actually looking forward to it too. I just wish I could remember the last time that we had a trade deadline like that. Do you remember any in particular that were just particularly engaging or crazy?
Gosh. I know there have been where there've been like lots of crazy things happening, but nothing comes to mind recently because the Phillies haven't been involved.
Right. Their last trade deadline deal was Hunter Pence, or big name, you know, big deal blockbuster.
Well, and that was exciting. I remember that one.
Mm-hmm. That was nuts. As I think I said on this podcast earlier this year, I think I was going in to see Cowboys and Aliens when I found out that that trade had happened. So that tells
that
you
classic film.
You know, that movie we all saw because Daniel Craig and Harrison Ford were in it. Oh, yeah. What a crazy summer. Anyway, the All-Star Game fan voting, Liz, that'll only have two rounds, but it doesn't sound that different to me. It says the first round is going to mirror the voting of old. So that's exactly what we've been doing. And then have a 24-hour election day in either late June or early July, where the top three vote getters at each position in each league during the primaries will, oh, my God, will be voted on by fans in a prescribed time period to determine the all-star starters. Now, Liz, why don't you break that down for us? Because I stopped paying attention in the middle of that sentence.
I'm not even sure.
As far as the game itself is concerned, the 10th inning, this rule continued, I forgot. And all subsequent innings of all-star games that go into extra innings will begin with a runner on base. Sorry, you may go ahead now. Please decode this.
Oh, my God. I mean, the voting itself, sure. Why not make it more complicated? Sure. I mean, what are you gonna, there's nothing you can really do to make any of this better. Like, you can sort of, but not without pissing off someone, either the fans or the players or the teams. So this is as good a solution as any. Make it more complicated.
Oh yeah.
Because I mean, honestly, I don't care. Like, the All-Star game is not, it's for the diehard fans. Like the NBA All-Star game, the NBA has been incredibly popular. The All-Star game in the NBA, I think, was the lowest rated ever. No one gives a shit about the NFL Pro Bowl.
Oh, God.
No one cares. No one cares. No one. You tell me you care, you're lying. You are absolutely lying just to be contrary, because no one cares about it.
You liars. Shut up out
and
there.
So, like, the All-Star games are for diehard fans. They are for the fans who live in the town where it's taking place. And they are for the players. It's for the players. It's not for, like, it's not for us. So everyone should stop acting like it's, you know, at least everyone at MLB desperately trying to hold on to viewers for this game. Like, just stop.
Lizard,
leave it alone.
Are you policing fandom right now?
Yes.
Why can't I be the kind of everyday baseball fan who ignores baseball entirely for 162 games a year, but tunes in solely for the Major League Baseball All-Star game? I have no idea who any of those people are. I just like
they don't exist. Why does Major League Baseball believes that these fans exist? They don't. People casually turn on the Super Bowl. People might casually turn on the World Series because it's so many games, it's seven games. They might casually turn on like other major, you know, championships. The All-Star game is not a casual fan thing.
But don't you want it to be?
Because casual fans usually like one team. They're like one team and they tune in to see that player. And if that, you know, if player from there isn't on, why bother?
Well, this idea just popped into my head because I was going to say, don't you want it to be like exciting for kids? Because that's when I remember being excited about the All-Star game, just seeing all the, obviously television was less prescient than it is now. But at the same time, you know, you didn't really see a lot of the other good players in baseball play. So seeing them all on screen together was like awesome. It was like the Avengers, but before that, well before that, and in sports form. So I was really into that, but maybe they do some sort of combination with this and their Little League Baseball initiative, and like only kids really make up most of the crowd at the All-Star game. I think that would be brilliant, actually, because I think is who that's
so
for.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, that's the way to involve kids and to really build your the hardcore base of the next generation of your fandom. You know, that's a really good idea. I mean, I love the All-Star game. I mean, I'll bitch about it because, you know, that's part of it. That's for me, that's part of the joy. I know it's part of the joy, actually, that I take in it is complaining about its awfulness. But I also love it. You know, I love that. I would watch the Home Run Derby all the time. Like, the All-Star game is nothing compared to the Home Run Derby for me.
Without the All-Star game, we wouldn't have had Chase Utley's mic pick him up saying fuck you to Mets fans. So let's,
oh my God, my heart.
Let's consider that before we make any, you know, harsh judgments.
I don't know. Like I said, I love, you know, I love it. And now All-Star bonus, the players are going to get actual bonus money.
Total player prize money for the Home Run Derby will be increased to $2.5 million. The winner of the Home Run Derby will receive $1 million.
For all places. I think you get money for just participating. Well, and also it said earlier, All-Star bonus payments will be given to the top three vote getters at each position in each league.
Yeah. So the, I don't know what, I mean, is this going to be further motivation for sluggers to come out and really like hack for the fences?
I hope so. I mean, I want it to be, I think it's that whatever you can do to get more players to participate. Like, I think they should be open to format changes every year, you know, depending on what the players want to do. Like, let them govern it. Why shouldn't the players have control over one of their own competitions? Why shouldn't the players decide what the Home Run Derby should look like from year to year?
Well, the players are the pivotal part of baseball, and the baseball we're looking forward to seeing in a couple of weeks. And we'll talk more about the players in baseball right after this rough transition to the first commercial break. And we're back. Liz, I don't know if you remember that cryptic, sexy transition I just pulled off going into the commercial, but I was hinting quite smoothly at our next topic, which is, of course, ESPN ranking the top 100 players in all of baseball, Liz. And you know what? For once, it felt like there were more than just a couple of Phillies on it, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you saw this, but we won't go through the whole thing. But we do want to talk about the Phillies that are on it, who else might be on it. So I believe we have all of the Phillies who are on this list here, and there are six of them, which ties with the Mets and Nationals, I believe, by my count, with six on this list of top 100 players. I thought this would be an interesting way to sort of break up the cement wall that's currently in first place in the NL East. So much of these teams are going to be struggling to break through, I think, in the coming season, just given how stacked the Phillies now are, how stacked the Nationals still are. The Mets having six players on this list really kind of opened me up again to the idea that the Mets might not be sneaky good. They might just be good this year, at least for a couple, like a month at a time.
At some point during the year, they will Mets.
Yes. Obviously, they've Mets'd a couple times this spring with Brandon Nimmo eating raw chicken or whatever.
Whatever the hell that was. I always feel like there's something in the way of the Mets being good, and usually it's the Mets themselves. It's usually the coach or the front office.
Oh, the Mets. Well, in any case, they're fortunate enough at this point that six of their players are on this list. I'll try to do it from memory. Sure. Michael Conforto was one of them. Obviously, Jacob DeGrom, Zach Wheeler, Robinson Cano, and Edwin Diaz. And I think that's only five. But in any case, two of those guys are obviously new to the Mets in the deal with Seattle that gained them Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz. Zach Wheeler and Jacob DeGrom are pretty solid members of the Mets rotation thus far. Michael Conforto is a good young outfielder, or has been against the Phillies. I remember him being troublesome in spots. What do you make of the Mets at this point, Liz, that they've got that many good players? They got to be approaching good team territory.
They've got a couple of guys who are super, super good. And then they've got a lot of other guys.
Syndergaard. You know, like sorry, it was Noah Syndergaard was the sixth, obviously. So that's a pretty stacked pitching staff.
I mean, they've got like, I mean, teams have had less. You know, they've have, you know, two of the best starting pitchers in baseball. They have a couple of great bullpen guys. They have Robinson Cano and Michael Conforto and other guys you just named, whose names I can't remember now.
They're Mets. They disappear behind like a blue and orange haze in our brains. That just, you know, it's a difficult place to access.
If everyone gets hot at once, they could be great, as any team would be, but it's hard to imagine them sustaining anything long term when I feel like their rotation is just way bad. Like they've got a lot, two good guys, and then the rest of it is just like a question mark of some kind. Like, and you look at their offseason moves, they did some really great things, but like it sticks in my mind that Phillies are talking about, you know, Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins, and then John Heyman tweeted something sad about the Mets.
Well,
you know, one of their no-name players, one of their 8 million no-name players got hurt, you know, or something like that. I'm just like, oh, frowny face.
Well, like the Mets, the Nats still have six guys on this list as well, despite, you know, our narrative sort of instinctively being finally the Nationals might not be the top team in the NL East. But no, they're obviously still in pretty good shape. But the Braves only had four on this list. And they were Freddie Freeman, of course, Ronald Acuna, Ozzie Albies, and Josh Donaldson made it. What do you think of that? He came in at number 90, so not too far up, but no Starling Marte, who was number 100.
Well, Josh Donaldson, everyone's like, wow, he signed for so much record. When he was traded, everyone was like, wow, they got him. It's amazing. Just like, I haven't been impressed with Josh Donaldson for like a year or so. He's been hurt a lot. And when he wasn't hurt, it's been a bit like everyone's still treating him like he's, you know, a golden god of hitting, and he's kind of not that guy right now. He needs to prove that he is that guy. I don't see that signing going very well, to be honest. I mean, I'll eat my words if I'm wrong. I'll admit it, but he hasn't impressed me in a while. So,
who are you more afraid of facing like 19, 20 times in one season, Josh Donaldson or Robinson Cano?
That's a question.
That's why I asked it. Yeah.
I'd say Cano.
Really? Even after everything we just said about the Mets? Because I thought, you know, yeah, he'll be annoying a couple of times, I bet. But then, you know, there'll be like the 2 month stretch where he has his Mets moment and like a firecracker sets his hat on fire and he like runs around in the outfield and then, you know, misses 2 weeks. Misses 2 weeks because he gets his head stuck in a bucket because it was full of water and that's what he used to extinguish it. All right, please continue.
I mean, the Phillies are going to have to face them both. So I kind of hate that it has to happen either way. Like, who knows? It depends on how good they are this season. Like, Cano has been better more recently than Donaldson. So I'll go with Cano being annoying, but
Donaldson, he really, I don't want to say he tanked, but man, he really fell off a cliff from his MVP season when he hit 297 with a 939 OPS, led the league in runs and RBI and touch bases. That was in 2014, but he was an all-star in 2016. His MVP year was 2015. But he was an all-star from 2014 to 2016. And in 2017, he was still good enough to be getting MVP votes. And then last year, when he went from Toronto to Cleveland at 32 years old, he wasn't even hitting 250 by the end of the year. So it's been a steep drop-off. He's been hurt. He only played in 52 games in 2018. He only played in 113 games in 2017. So he dropped off in a serious way. And I remember him coming up in potential Phillies signing rumors. Was he a part of this free agent class, this like epic free agent class that was going to happen this year, and like he made an early exit from it, or no? Am I remembering that wrong?
Oh no, he was part of it, and he signed a deal with a very large deal,
like right away,
1 year deal with the Braves.
All right,
yeah, it was. Yeah, he's being paid $23 million, which is how much he got paid in 2018. I don't remember when though. I think it was before Christmas, so I guess that we'd consider that early.
So, yeah, 10, 12 years ago, we'll settle on that. But anyway, that's what the Phillies are dealing with in the...
It feels like a different world.
The Phillies are dealing with a new NL East, just like all the other NL East teams. You may have noticed I didn't go through the Marlins players because I don't consider them a team, and I don't mean that as like cheekily. I just mean, how can you right now? So
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. So moving on to the Phillies and how they stack up against these other teams, according to this, you know, deeply arbitrary list, of which Mike Trout is the number one pick, obviously. So the Phillies have six guys, like I said, on this list. We start with Gene Segura at number 79 between Yasmani Grandal and Gleyber Torres. Then Reese Hoskins. Well, let's start with Segura. Actually, you know what? See if you can guess the other three I didn't say. Because I was going to have you guess all five and I forgot. So you already know Segura. I already started saying the other guys' names. Who do you think the other three are?
I didn't hear the other guy that you said. So I'm still, I know you says Gene Segura. It's gotta be Reese Hoskins.
Yep.
Bryce Harper, Aaron Nola. Who am I missing?
I can't believe you're not getting it.
Is it Scott Kingery? Who's it?
No, it's JT Realmuto.
JT, I'm sorry. I still forget. There's so many new dudes on this team.
So many new dudes.
It's all great.
Hoskins came in at number 45. He was above Steven Strasburg, but below Carlos Carrasco. Realmuto.
And Trevor Bauer at 39.
Ugh, indeed.
Garbage can.
Realmuto was number 28. He was a step above Javi Baez, who is you and I share an affinity for, and below Carlos Correa. And Nola came in at number 24, one spot above Noah Syndergaard. You'll be surprised to learn. I certainly was. And one below Luis Severino. So, yeah, he was in pretty good company at number 24. Bryce Harper obviously was the big story of the day because he had dropped from number five last year to how far do you think he dropped? What ranking do you think he's in?
I'm looking at the list, so I know. No, I'm looking
well,
at it.
Thank you for your honesty. You've made this a much less interesting segment. Yeah, Bryce Harper.
I didn't look before. It's I just look now. He's at 15. Yeah,
he dropped from 5 to 15. He's above Corey Kluber. He's below Jose Ramirez. You know, honestly.
I mean, he had a bad 2018. His 2018 was not great. We know the type of player he can be and the type of player we all hope he will return to being very soon. So,
I mean,
you know, I think it's worthy. And I also don't think he gives a crap.
Oh, I'm positive he doesn't give a crap. What, he doesn't have to give a crap about anything for the rest of his life. I will say that, I mean, this kind of fits into this narrative that we've been hearing about all winter long, because it was some people's arguments for why they shouldn't sign him, that he's not worth it, that, you know, he had one good season a couple of years ago and, he's fallen so far that that basically he's irrecoverable, which, you know, at 26 years old, it's tough to throw in the towel on a guy who's been, you know, a phenom basically for his entire career, even back in college.
One good season is really a dumb thing to say. But like, he has had two exceptional seasons. He's had two great seasons and then two not so impressive seasons. So, you know, and I think I remember looking at his, kind of digging deeper into his numbers, that he had a pretty good, like, last burst. Like, he remembered how to hit in, like, the latter part of the year and sort of pulled his average back up to closer, semi-closer to where it should
still
be.
Still led the league in walks, by the way.
Yes, he did. Like, he's still a good player, and there's still so. I mean, I can't even with this. I can't believe we're talking about this already.
Back?
He hasn't even played in the first game.
You want to go back and talk about what people were saying before he signed? You didn't realize I just kind of I just kind of mindlessly defaulted back to our regular setting of the past couple of months.
Oh my God.
Yeah, quick.
My God.
Quick sidebar. This list of the 100 best players from ESPN, it included a couple of guys who didn't have little logos next to their name because they don't have teams yet. And remember, this is a list of the 100 best players of baseball on the planet Earth. Number 86, Dallas Keuchel. Your friend, Liz Rocher, your best friend. You won't stop talking about how much you want Dallas Keuchel on this team. Why don't you give us a taste of that?
Well, there you just heard it.
Speechless with desire, folks, over Dallas.
You just heard it. I mean, you all missed it. Did I not say anything? Did nothing come out of my mouth?
She had her microphone on mute, but screamed so loud she cracked a bunch of windows in her house. Yeah, that's actually what happened there. Liz, Dallas Keuchel.
Oh, yeah.
Dallas Keuchel.
Sorry, I just wanted to break in. I finally did look up Bryce Harper's number. He hit 300 in the second half. 300, 434, 538 after hitting 200 in the first half. So everyone who had stupid things to say can just
well, suck he has girl's hair, so I don't want him on my team. That's for sure. Actual argument. So in any case, Dallas Keuchel dropped from number 33 on last year's rankings down to 86. Liz, how damaging was this list to Dallas Keuchel's career?
I'm sure he's still weeping about it. I'm sure it's all anyone can talk about it in the water coolers of MLB spring training facilities. I hope he's like
$86 is the amount of baseball I'll play for now that I've been absolutely had my reputation destroyed by ESPN's top 100 baseball players.
Been laid low.
But yeah, I mean, what do you think? Is there anybody missing on the Phillies who should be on this list of top players? I mean, you guessed Scott Kingery when you were still trying to fill us.
I don't know what happened. I was literally like names were popping. I'm just like, who else is? I was trying to think of who else is on the Phillies because the next name I was going to say is Nick Williams. And then I'm like, no, none of those names work here.
You know, I thought they did a.
I was just naming Phillies. It had no meaning behind it. And I would have picked probably JT Realmuto last because I keep forgetting he's on the team.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, someone else we're forgetting is on the team a lot this offseason is somebody else that was maybe a guess just off the top of your head. But David Robertson, you know, that's somebody who could have been probably on that list. He was a bounce back. He was a. Recovering the way all seems like all elite closers do at some point. It's like, well, it turns out he was like he was training by like setting his arm on fire and then throwing the baseball. That's why he could throw so hard. So he's out for 2 years, but he'll be back. And so David Robertson's on like the other side of that. He had a pretty rough health year last year, but he's 34 years old. I think he could crack that list. He could have been a potential member of that list. And what do you think of, do you think Odubel Herrera would have been a good guess? Probably not after his terrible season last year.
Yeah, not after last year, but after the year before, maybe.
And perhaps
he had a really terrible second half that year.
Yeah, he's a half guy. Definitely plays one half of the season with the bat upside down in his hands. Sir Anthony Dominguez, another potential top 100 player. Maybe next year, maybe in a couple of years. Who knows? I also keep forgetting about Sir Anthony Dominguez. A, because he was already here, and B, because I don't. You tend to think a little less about the bullpen. I think a lot of fans, and that's why David Robertson was probably the Phillies' most forgotten acquisition of the offseason for so long. But I really like. The Sir Anthony Dominguez, David Robertson, 1-2 punch at the back of that bullpen. I don't know. Do you hate it, Liz? Do you have the exact opposite feeling? I expect you do.
It's just so many passionate feelings. No, of course I like it. I mean, I keep forgetting about Sir Anthony Dominguez too.
Poor Sir Anthony.
I mean, just now that there are so many, like the players we're talking about a lot are no longer like Tommy Hunter and Pat Neshek. Like who cares about those dudes?
Still the team.
There's so many more interesting players now. So, I mean, I'm sure they're still around. I haven't heard otherwise, but you know, we don't really need or want to talk about them. You know, Sir Anthony Dominguez hasn't exactly, you know, faded away, but he's sort of blended into the woodwork because he's been around, you know, already. He's not new. You know, we kind of know what to expect of him, you know, and expect from him. So You know, I think we're all a little bit more interested in the dudes who are about to put on pinstripes and play at Citizens Bank Park as Phillies for the first time.
Speaking of forgotten pitchers, this is a sidebar from our sidebar. But Drew Anderson this spring showing some interestingly good stuff. Obviously, it's a classic case of, guy looks good in spring training without having a track record in the regular season for you to really think, well, maybe this guy's for real. Seems like a pretty classic situation of spring training blindness. He did pitch in a game today, which the Phillies won 4-3 in Port Charlotte against the Rays. He went four innings. He allowed two hits, no earned runs, a walk, and a strikeout. Honestly, Liz, that's the fourth appearance for the fourth appearance of Drew Anderson this spring. And not one of them has been bad at all. He's got 12 and two-thirds innings down. His ERA is 0.71. He has 12 strikeouts, including one today, like we said. I mean, what do you think? Drew Anderson, he's trying out a new cutter.
Seems to be working.
He's seen a lot of raw hitters, young hitters. When he pitched against the Yankees, Matt Winkleman pointed out that I don't think they batted a single veteran against him. But I don't know. I mean, what do you think? Is the back of the Phillies rotation ambiguous enough that Drew Anderson could sneak in?
I don't see why not. I don't think he will at the beginning. I think they'll probably they'll probably put him in AAA if they want him to start. So, because I think the dudes that they have in the back of the rotation have kind of earned their spot in a way. You know, can you really see them starting Nick Pivetta down in AAA? I mean, he'd have to forget how to pitch. He'd have to start trying to throw the ball with his elbow somehow. That's the only way he starts. And like another with Vince Velasquez. So that's what? It's Zach Eflin and Drew Anderson, right?
You mean as far as filling those back three positions?
Yeah.
It would be, oh my God. It's Zach Eflin, Vince Velasquez, Nick Pivetta, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't see them putting Pivetta or Velasquez down in AAA. Like Zach Eflin is the only one I could see potentially doing that, but I think they probably want him in the majors. Like again, he would have to be like epically bad, I think, maybe to jeopardize his starting position. But maybe things have changed, and I don't know about it. We'll see what happens.
You're right, actually. I've been talking about these three other rotation spots as if there's some sort of like real mystery going on for another year in a row. It's not as solid. I think it's potential that one of them could be replaced if someone came up and like was good enough. But at this moment, other than Drew Anderson, I'm not sure who that person would be. They've already done two rounds of cuts, which also makes it interesting that Drew Anderson is still here. But I think you're right. Like at this point, Ben Lively is gone. Jake Thompson is gone. You know, they're
I forgot Ben Lively even existed.
Yeah. These are guys who, were considered not answers, but potentials, or they were just filling in, when somebody got hurt. Jared Eichhoff still has lingering health issues. We've seen him pitch a couple of times. From what I've seen, it hasn't really gone that great for him this spring. So really not only are they the best suited for these last three starting jobs, there really isn't anyone else at the moment in the organization who you would think could take on that role. And that's, you know, what you were thinking before you see Drew Anderson have an interesting spring. But at the same time, yeah, what is this, like year three that we're going to see this crew of familiar faces in the rotation, right? This has got to be the third time since they were acquired.
Yeah. I mean, and this is sort of, I mean, we say that all the time, but this is sort of where the rubber meets the road, because now that they have Harper on board, they could actually go out and get a pitcher.
Right.
Like they can act like if the rotation starts to look like hot garbage, then, you know, Drew Anderson is the ripcord guy. He's the, you know, the emergency parachute man, because if, you know, Zach Eflin starts to eat it hard, then that's when, you know, you call up Drew Anderson from AAA to sort of stop the bleeding for a little while. But, you know, if that is probably not a permanent solution. I mean, your fifth starter is always going to be kind of iffy, but, you know, they could go out and get someone, and I could say goodbye to any of those back three at any point. Like, I like them enough, but I don't know how much any of them have to sort of stick around. We've sort of been waiting for any of them to show consistency for, this is like the third year. Like, they, who are they? We need to finally say, oh, we know who they are.
And we do. I think you're right, to an extent. I mean, they've all had problems with health issues along the way. Remember when Zach Eflin had both his knees replaced? and who they are guys who were traded, who were acquired in trades, the from Cole Hamels, Jimmy Rollins, and Ken Giles. So they, I don't know, maybe there's something lingering with the Phillies that, like, look, this is who we traded the core away. Well, they didn't. It was a different front office, so probably they don't think about that at all. Yeah, Liz, this is it's a little less interesting than I think I've been making it. At the same time, it would be awesome to see something interesting come out of spring training, like a Drew Anderson. I keep having water thrown on me by the bucket when I bring up Dylan Cousins, that he is not someone who is going to see a lot of major league pitching this year, no matter what sort of miraculous narrative I build around him.
I like how you put that. It's not anyone specifically throwing a bucket of water on you. It's the bucket itself protesting your comments so much that it fills itself with water and dumps itself on you and your dreams.
Oh, see, now I was picturing it that I was like walking down an alley and everyone was just like a bunch of washerwomen were like throwing buckets of water out the window. And I just was hit by all of them. Like, not a single one missed me.
And I'm imagining like an angry Fantasia bucket of water just chasing you around for your Dylan Cousins opinions.
Right. So now just bottle that. And that's how I feel about Dylan Cousins, that scenario. Well,
I mean, the pitching battle is interesting in its own way, because something interesting could come out of spring training. You know, we're going to see Drew Anderson at some point this year, you know, and even if he doesn't have a realistic shot at the rotation, them keeping him here that long, I think is like a sign of respect.
Right.
You know, we know, like, you have the stuff to stick here, and we're going to let you stick with these guys as long as we can until, you know, we can't anymore.
Yeah. And he's been around for a bit as well. Like I said, he made his first appearance for the Phillies in 2017. He only appeared in two games and things were not great. He had the unfairly recorded ERA over two games and two and a third innings of 23.14. But he was drafted by the Phillies in 2012. He's been in the Phillies farm system since he was 18 years old in 2012. So he's been around too. He's been around for a while. But yeah, I think at this point we're going to find out a lot about this pitching staff's future moving forward. Jake Arrieta pitched today and he looked like crap too. So we keep acting like those two spots are settled, but yeah, I don't know. Arrieta has not been a stable force in that rotation since I want to say since maybe halfway through last year, maybe a little less. He had two.
I mean, he also was injured, but you know, and I think he looked fine at one point this spring training, you know, and a guy like Drew Anderson is pitching for a spot. Jake Arrieta isn't pitching for a spot.
They should send Jake Arrieta to AAA just to see what happens next.
Lots of, I'm going to guess, angry running around and, you know, weird print underwear. But he, you know, he's not pitching for a spot. He knows he's making the major league team. And so maybe he's working hard, but maybe he's doing something different. You know, I don't think he cares about his spring training stats. Every players hate spring training.
Oh, it's so, they should just not record stats for spring training and just infuriate certain fans. Just make it an unbearable new change. Hey, if you want to make a rule change to baseball, make that one. The one that's really only like external facing. The one about the statistics. We don't need spring training statistics. We really don't.
It was hard to find them for a while. Yeah. It was because I used to write spring training recaps and I would be like, where, you know, I only watched half of the game because I had, I was working in an office at the time. So, you know, I would need to find out who, you know, what the record was for the day. And I couldn't find it after a certain time.
Yeah, that's it exists in a vacuum. You know, it's 1 second spring training stats are there and the next they just don't matter anymore. So that's kind of the approach we should all have to them at this point. And if you want spring training to go away, maybe you want this podcast to go away, which it will for a commercial break right after another rough transition. Well, for our last topic on this episode of Continued Success, Liz, we're going to talk about another fan component to baseball that the players really aren't a part of at all. And that is, of course, season tickets. Have you ever, this is not about to be a commercial for Philly season tickets, the way it just sounded like, I apologize. Liz, have you ever owned a set of season tickets for any sport?
Yes, actually. I have season tickets with my fiance to the local single A baseball team, the Dayton Dragons.
And I've known people with season tickets. I had a Sunday home game season ticket package for the Phillies when I was in college, actually. The next girlfriend of mine used to work at the for the Sixers as a season ticket representative. So it's, I'm not citing our credentials as though you'd think we weren't able to talk about what season tickets are. It's just more, you get an idea of like that system when you have season tickets, when you know someone who works with a team to sell season tickets. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, what's your general take? I didn't realize like the concept itself could be dying out, but according to Ballpark Digest, it's actually something, it's dropping in number, as something that people used to secure their seats and people would like pass them on to like their kids in some, very dramatic cases. But like, this was something of an institution. And as far as the marketing of teams goes, they obviously, like I said, they have partial season ticket packages available for most teams, but like in general, the purchasing of these like two seats for the entire season, especially in baseball, I imagine, has become something of a anomaly. Well, it's the Twins who are sort of changing this. I don't know if it's instead or in addition to regular season tickets, where you have tickets to every game, but they're doing something called a ballpark pass, which Ballpark Digest talked about. And I'll just read the paragraph from that explains what it is. The Twins are combining the ease of use of a ballpark pass with the advantage of a fixed seat in a Twins Pass program. For a flat fee, the buyer can get access to Target Field for up to 79 games. Two of the certain sellout games are not included and are sold at three different levels: $894 for a lower level seat, $494 for an upper deck seat, and $294 for standing room only. Twins passes are billed monthly. Fans can request a seat through a phone app before, like a week before a game, or just go down to the stadium to get it. And currently seats are randomly allocated. So that's like a different take on season tickets. And I don't know, it makes sense to me because I remember the Sunday home game season ticket package being at times like, oh my God, we got to go to a game this week. Like, it becomes an obligation, especially in baseball when they play so many games. So I can't imagine having season tickets to a Major League Baseball season. Obviously that's why people wind up splitting them all up, but this just seems like, I don't know. It seems like it makes sense for people who like want the option at least to go see any game, but don't necessarily want the obligation to. I don't know. I mean, just before we get into anything else, is that even a system you think that makes more sense for fans?
I think it makes a lot of sense. I would love to be able to do that. Like, we don't attend, we don't have a massive season ticket package for the Dragons, but there's always a handful of games, during the season that, we have tickets for that we can't attend, and sometimes they let us switch them around. Sometimes they're in the, in our same seats. Sometimes they're in different seats. And it's nice that they let us do that, but it's not always an option. It would be nice if they would let us build that in, and have like always have the option to move a game.
And
I think it's a really great idea because sometimes you want to go to a game and sometimes you don't, sometimes you can't.
And they're not the first team to do something like this. I mean, the Phillies have a spring pass that I think they all, they still had some on the shelves, but they all burst into flames the second they signed Bryce Harper. So those are no longer available. But that I remember that sounding kind of similar. I think it is just like that for that. It's like picking picking a couple of tickets to whichever games you would like to see over the course of a certain month. Or if it's for all home games, I think it's for all home games. But in any case, it's not the exact same thing, but that it is a similar program for people who don't want to commit to like a full season. But I don't know. Has anybody else done something close to this? I imagine they have.
I know the Athletics have something like that. It's called A's Access. That guarantees people access to every game. Like, plans start at $240. I think it's for general admission. you know, and they escalate, you know, up depending on the type of seats you want. There isn't the same sort of seat flexibility, but they have other benefits like half price concessions at every game, $3 hot dogs, $4 beer. You know, they get, you know, free seat upgrades. They can do stuff with friends. They can, you know, I that's the type of stuff I like, that sort of forward thinking. You know, these are, both of these teams have had tough sort of breaks with attendance. The A's can't pay people to attend their games sometimes. And like the Twins, I believe, had their, something that spurred this was that they had their lowest, they had the lowest attendance in recent history in the 2018 season. So they're trying new things to get people to attend games. And this is the stuff they have to try. Like the season ticket model is old.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not something that we, you know, we're becoming the main consumers of things now. Millennials, I say we as in you and I, Justin and I fall into the millennial category. Which means anything now, I think, from age 35 to someone who's just been born. Anyone younger than a certain age is a millennial.
Wow, we're still scooping up millennials? Wow, man, we are terrible.
No, we're not, actually.
We are a swarm at this point.
I know. But, you know, we're becoming the main consumers of things. We're the people with, you know, active families and more buying power. And we're not buying season tickets, and they want to find out how they can convince us to do that. And this is a good step in the right direction.
Do you think
making them a lot cheaper is also a way to do it? They could try that.
Do you think that baseball, well, you know, last year we've seen teams look at season ticket things and try to revamp that at like the Twins and like the A's. Last year, the Orioles instituted their Kids Cheer Free program where kids 9 and under got in for free at Camden Yards. Do you think baseball, and I trust me, I have an answer to this and I'm pretty sure it's the same as yours. Do you think what else could baseball be doing to engage their younger fans that they seek so strongly at this point, that they need so strongly at this point? Because, you know, All-Star game just for little leaguers sounds pretty good, but are enough teams doing enough to engage younger fans?
No, of course not. I mean, the Phillies do their part. They have a whole lot of promotions that are just for kids 15 and under. And I think they do that so their parents will bring them. So either the kids can get them or the parents can take the things from them, because most of them are things that I want that they just won't give to people who are over 15.
I knew that's what this was.
I really hate that. But they do things like that for kids. I think they could do more. I think what the Orioles did is great. But, you know, the ticket itself is only part of why it's so expensive to bring children to a game. They all need food and, you know, food and drink. You know, they want to buy things. So maybe the Kids Cheer Free could also include discounted concessions and a free t-shirt, like on, you know, certain days. Like, actually, don't just be like, it is a pleasure to give you a small discount to allow you to bring your child to a game. You know, actually act like you want the kids there. If it stops being completely about making money off of them for just one freaking minute, they might actually win a few more fans.
Well, I'm hoping, and I said this when he was signed, I'm hoping that Bryce Harper's signing brings in a whole new generation of Phillies fans, because I think this is about to be a fun team again. And as we talked about when I paralleled his signing with Jim Thome's and my own fandom, it'd be really cool to see the Phillies doing more to get kids involved and getting like that youth demographic. But they are good with what stuff they do with kids. I think they do a great job. But you know, until the baseball median fan age goes below 56, nobody's doing enough, I guess.
Yep.
Well, in any case, that'll do it for this episode of Continued Success. Thank you for listening as always. And if you haven't, why not download, subscribe, and rate all of our podcasts as members of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season, The Dirty Inning, and this podcast, Continued Success. We have a very fun and interesting regular season coming up. And on this podcast, Liz and I are going to go back to what we started this podcast to do, which is trace the seasons day by day of past historic Phillies teams. Last year we did the 2008 and 1993 Phillies. This year we're going to take a look at the 2009 Phillies throughout the season. So next week we'll be having our review of 2009 Phillies spring training camp. So that'll be something to look forward to. And don't go on Wikipedia and look up what happened. You're just going to ruin it. So we will talk to you next time on Continued Success. Thank you for listening.